I'm Abby Kinney, and you are listening to Upzoned. Got my bus pass, been a ride, first class streetcar downtown with a fine ladies in the peeps are. OG said, don't hurt nobody. Look at this damn thing, got my fit on. Hey everyone, thank you for listening to another episode of Upzoned, a show where we explore one big story from the news each week that touches the Strongtown's conversation, and we upzone it. We talk about it in depth. I'm Abby Kinney, an urban planner with Gould Evans, and today I'm joined by Rachel Quedno, the program director of Strong Towns and an individual that I am very much enjoying getting introduced to. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm also enjoying getting to know you from afar.
Yes, from afar. So, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago on the phone for a little bit, and it later occurred to me that I had listened to a podcast on Strong Towns from back in October when Chuck's book was first launched. And I ended up going back and re-listening to your discussion with Chuck and what you guys were talking about back in October, which is interesting because you were talking about how crazy election years tend to become and how important it is to be meaningful without getting wrapped up in craziness. And I don't think you guys were expecting 2020 to be quite what it has become, but I did find your discussion to be so relevant to where we are today and what we are going to be talking about today.
Yeah. Wow. I forgot about that. I should go back and listen to that. I volunteer with a group of young people. I was asking them today, what would you go back and tell your August 2019 self? Because that was when they started their program. And they were all coronavirus. So yeah, I don't think any of us could really have predicted the world that we live in right now. But we're doing our best.
Well, I would definitely recommend going back and listening to your guys' discussion because it's almost eerie how relevant it was. So today's article that we'll be covering today was published in the American Compass by writer Chris Arnotti entitled Chaos in the Time of COVID. In the article, the writer compares today's world to the study of physics, where in order to reveal deeper truths, particles must be slammed together to expose their inner structure. He talks about how this pandemic and subsequent protest demonstrations have been really a manifestation of this type of process, with friction revealing the division of individuals in our country based on geography, race, education, and wealth. The question is how we will ever all fit back together again. I'm excited that you shared this article with me because you not only seem to have a really grounded way of looking at the world, but also have a background in dialogue facilitation and conflict resolution and have mastered in the study of religion, ethics, and politics. You know, to me, it seems that the division that we are seeing today, in a sense, has some parallels with religious dogma. Chuck sometimes talks about how people have an economic religion that they subscribe to, sometimes unquestionably. And we kind of see this phenomenon in the political dogma, and sometimes to a point that other points of views are not open to debate. It seems that we need a healthier conversation in order to come together. And as somebody who has studied religion and politics, I'm curious about your perspective on ideology in the light of recent events.
Yeah, I could not agree more. I think politics has become a religion for many people right now. And yeah, it's to a point where the divisions are so strong and so often not productive. I think also interesting to note, as religiosity, at least official religiosity, has declined in America, I think people are probably investing some of the energy that they might have invested in a religious belief or community, potentially in getting really interested in political action and following conversations about politics online, which is totally fine. But yes, I too am frustrated by the divisions in our country. And I think Chris Arnotti is a really interesting writer because he gets past those divisions and past the stereotypes that I live in a East Coast liberal city. I know that I don't have a good understanding of, for instance, one of the populations that he focuses a lot of his work on is like folks in rural communities experiencing and dealing with opioid addiction. And that's not an experience that I see, you know, in my neighborhood. Maybe it's happening and I'm not aware of it, but I appreciate the way that he kind of lifts the veil on communities that aren't often talked about or not talked about enough in the media. So we've interviewed him before and featured him on our site. I think this article is definitely thought-provoking.
Yeah, something that really resonated with me in this article was the author's description of all the various different kind of types of people and how their experiences during this pandemic differ, as well as where their angst seems to be directed. He talks about entrepreneurs frustrated with stay-at-home orders and then rural residents being frustrated with urban residents and the most disenfranchised people frustrated with the hashtag alone together sentiment of coming from the comfortable work from home class. The personal experiences of people during this time differ so widely, all while division seems to be reinforced through much of our media space these days, especially social media. What I find interesting is the level of divisiveness being played out at various scales. With this being a very chaotic election year, the ideological intensity seems to scale up when we're talking about federal level politics. But at the neighborhood scale, you see more and more people coming together through acts of kindness all across our country. The characterizations that are presented by the author are easy to resonate with because they're really high level. But I think that starts to break down when you think locally. When you talk to your neighbors and also see acts of kindness and peace demonstrated in communities, the ideological tribe that you belong to in regards to political leanings, class, race, that it all becomes less relevant and people become more human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And that's very aligned with the mission that we really focus on at Strong Towns, which is like get out in your neighborhood, learn what your neighbors are concerned about, what their needs are, and then do the next smallest incremental thing you can do to change that. So the national discourse is, yeah, it's very frustrating and it puts people into boxes that the average person has a lot more nuance in their identity, I think. This article really reminded me of something I read. It was published several weeks ago, but on the blog Corner Side Yard, which is written by Pete Saunders. I'll include a link in the show notes for sure. This piece was called Rise of the Essential Class. And he also talks about how different classes are having a totally different experience of the pandemic. Again, like I see that the blogs that I'm reading and the Instagram posts I'm seeing and many of my, you know, Facebook friends, they're doing decently. They're doing okay right now. Like some folks have lost their jobs, but people have savings. People are able to work from home. They're able to like figure out childcare, even though it's really stressful to like have your kids around you all day where you're trying to work, versus like the folks that are cleaning hospital beds and working at the grocery store, having to go to work or having been marginalized before the pandemic happened. And now that is just compounded by health disparities, economic disparities, and like a total lack of job opportunities. So yeah, I'm totally seeing the vast differences in what's happening right now. The pandemic has definitely just exacerbated our disparities. And it's not a surprise that frustration and anger has really exploded over the last couple of weeks with people getting out on the streets and advocating.
That's a really interesting point. And it's something that like I see on my social media feeds where throughout this pandemic, you have some people who are talking about how they're now unemployed and asking for help. And then you scroll down and somebody else is at a winery. And so it's people are living completely different worlds. And it's so impacted by a number of different things, obviously. in the past couple of weeks, it has seemed to all the frustration of the past few months, years, decades for many people have exploded. And, you know, with the killing of George Floyd, that seems to have been the match that ignited years of kind of a seeping, flammable gas that was really visible to varying degrees for so many people. People who have experienced or are working to fix injustices actively in our system have kind of always known that there was this gas leak, but, you know, all their calls to fix it were ignored or, you know, weren't met with the resources needed. People not experiencing injustices but aware and educated about them kind of seemed to be the type of people who were assuming that somebody else was going to come and fix the gas leak. And then there's the people who had no awareness that there was a gas leak at all. And now you see them reacting with shock and criticism and all these other kind of feelings. So it is interesting how everybody kind of comes to this with a different perspective that is really, you know, affected by elements of class, race, political factions, the people you even spend your time with, your education. All these reactions are different in the wake of today's events.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the question is, like, are the interactions and greater levels of awareness going to be sustained? We definitely are seeing changes happening with police departments across the country, but will those last? Will there be additional changes? Will this, like, consciousness about race issues remain in the minds of people who are able to ignore them largely in their lives? I'm not sure. I'm hopeful, but I can't predict the future.
I've seen more people talking about redlining and historic systematic injustices more in the past couple of weeks than I've ever seen before. When I went to planning school, that was the first time I ever became aware of redlining, blockbusting, all of these practices that have resulted in this pattern we see in cities across the country. And it was really frustrating to me that my elementary school, my middle school, my high school did not teach that. And I had to go to a university to learn that history, and, you know, a university studying a social science to learn that history. That was something that was really frustrating to me, because there's so many people who are just, they just grow up and are not educated about something that is a core part of our history in the United States. And, you know, people who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. And it, to me, it's encouraging that more and more people are talking about these systematic issues rather than necessarily pointing fingers and saying, you know, you're the blame for this. It's all about educating yourself and making people aware of the resources that are out there. I always recommend people to read The Color of Law. It's a really important book, and I'm happy that more and more people are sharing it nowadays. And so that's a good thing. And I think that there's a benefit of becoming more educated about things. And I think that the public education system can play a role in, you know, educating us about our history in a more accurate way.
Yeah, for sure. To go back to something you were saying earlier regarding, like, this difference between federal, national issues, national politics versus local stuff, I do find hope in seeing how people have been stepping up and helping their neighbors during this time, whether it's, like, surrounding, supporting protesters, or whether it is around the pandemic. Like, I think I'm going to write an article about this later in the week. I've been seeing just, like, all these signs in my neighborhood, like, hey, if you need help, go to this website and you can get connected with food resources, or people, like, collecting donations. There's now, like, a testing site a few blocks away from my house. So, and not to mention, like, the really small stuff of just, like, people are walking and saying hi to their neighbors and, like, checking in on their neighbors who might be more vulnerable. That does give me hope. And I know that, like, this article by Chris Arnotti ends very hopelessly. And I think you and I, based on the notes I saw you sent over, we both have a little bit more hope about the future than he does.
I feel like that comes from looking at this kind of heightened level of drama in federal politics. You look at that and it does feel hopeless. It's like there's no way that the left and the right are going to be able to come together to solve anything. And so therefore it's hopeless and the drama is never ending. Something that I appreciate about Strong Towns is the emphasis at the local level. Politics at the federal level is clearly, to me, unstable and unhealthy. And seeing the drama of it sometimes does awaken, you know, in me the urge to throw my hands up in the air and hope for an overnight revolution. Understanding the perspective of the writers and contributors at Strong Towns helps me to back away from that a little bit, because it's so important to have humility in the fact that we don't individually know how to solve every problem in the world. And we really need to have more constructive discourse and engagement in order to move forward in an intentional way. I see kindness, peace, helpfulness of humanity when I open my eyes and look at my own community. And if we want to make change, I think that we've got to sometimes put down our phones and let go of the rage of our, you know, ever-ending dividing media channels and act locally. That's a choice that all of us can make every day. We can replace succumbing to drama and division with proactive and positive actions towards a better world. In the wake of today's exposure to the inequities of our society, many people are kind of asking what they can do to help. And I think that it starts with building on your own capabilities and expertise and engaging people at the local level. Changing the world starts with being intentional in your own actions, building relationships, and then also engaging in your surroundings. So to me, that's how I see the revolution, and that's definitely not going to be televised.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, that's one of the things I love most about being part of the Strong Towns movement is there are so many people all over the country who are connected to this movement who do not fit your typical assumptions about what a Republican or a Democrat or anybody in between might look like and think like. And we have people who are taking action in their places and saying, here's what's needed. Here's what my neighbors want. And let's try to make it happen. Rather than like, let's hope and pray for some, you know, law to pass in the Senate that's going to be full of half bad things anyway. Yeah, I think we can make a lot more difference at the local level.
Yeah, I completely agree. Well, this has been a really great discussion. And before we wrap up today, we are going to move to the Down Zone, which is the part of the show where we can share anything that we've been doing, reading, listening to, watching. What do you have for us today, Rachel?
Yeah, I'm glad that I've listened to a few podcasts of yours so I can be prepared for this part. In general, I'm always really into cooking, and this time of being at home and all the restaurants being mostly closed has meant even more cooking. So I'm still trying to enjoy that. We just got our first farm share from the CSA. So got some like radishes and baby bok choy and strawberries to figure out what to do with. I'm also reading a book by my colleague John Pattison called Slow Church, which he co-wrote with a guy whose name I'm going to forget, Christopher Smith, I think. It's a fantastic kind of take on like how so many churches today have become, they called like McDonaldized, and really like just turned into commodities that can quickly like bring people in and convert them and, you know, send them out, rather than churches being invested in their neighborhoods and the people and like playing the long game of like loving people and knowing people versus just like trying to turn them into something. I'm not doing a very good job of summarizing it, but it's beautiful. And John is an awesome writer. That's a little bit of what's been occupying my time. How about you?
Well, that's a great Down Zone. And that sounds like a really interesting book. I've definitely seen that in my own hometown. I grew up Catholic, and we had our church that was kind of sort of in the neighborhood, and then a bunch of others as I was growing up, mega churches that were popping up around town. And I kind of distinctly remember when that was happening. So that sounds like a really interesting analysis. I'd be interested in reading that. So I guess my down zone, well, first of all, I've been attending the virtual conference for the Congress for New Urbanism this week.
Yeah,
I was supposed to go to Minneapolis, of all places, to attend this conference. I've never been before. And I actually spoke at one of the sessions. And so it was exciting to see it move online. And the benefit is that we all have the ability to actually watch webinars that we may not have been able to get to. So they're all recorded. And if you signed up for the conference, you can actually go in and watch all the different recorded sessions. So I'm really impressed not only with the content of this conference, but also with the ability to kind of engage with other people in this app that they created. So yeah, I was sad that I wasn't going to be able to go to Minneapolis and attend this conference, but it's pretty cool how they were able to adapt to the current situation and still engage people in that.
What was your presentation on?
My presentation was on quantifying incremental change. So it was with Joe Menicozzi and Kevin Klinkenberg. And we talked about all the different ways of kind of quantifying incrementalism. And so I talked about how we incorporated the Urban 3 methods of geo-accounting at the neighborhood level and how that impacts biases that people have just to see the numbers.
Cool.
I guess one other thing that I would add is that last night, I showed you some videos before this, but last night my neighborhood had a surprise concert in order to raise money for Black Lives Matter. And it was really, really fun. There were a bunch of musicians that were up on a rooftop and played all kinds of music. They played the bass, the fiddle, the guitar, people singing, and a bunch of people in the neighborhood came out and social distanced in the street. And it was just a really special time. And it was a beautiful thing. And it made me have a whole new appreciation for the community I live in.
That sounds so lovely. We just moved into a new apartment a couple months ago, and it's like a little row of townhouses, and the landlady's like right next door, and she keeps talking about how like every summer she throws a cookout, and I'm like dying for this cookout, but that's not so doable right now. So any chance to see your neighbors sounds beautiful.
Yeah, that's a great thing. Well, thanks for joining me today, and thank you everyone for listening to another episode of Upzoned. Keep doing what you can to build a strong town. Thanks, Rachel.
Yeah, thanks, Abby.